can try to control as best I can within the Denver Health environment this intervention. And so we will go back and measure cavities next summer and see if there's been any impact. We have 8 clinics, and we have implemented this in 4 of the clinics. Those are our intervention clinics. And we've held off on implementing this in 4. And so we'll go back next summer and measure cavities both in the clinics where we have implemented and haven't. And hopefully we'll see a difference. We think we do, anecdotally we do, but it would be nice to actually measure that. I was just at a Head Start meeting, and they're doing all their mandatory Head Start dental screenings, and this is our population, and they anecdotally feel like we are, but we'll try to actually show that we are. So now I just kind of want to step back and change gears a little bit. So now I'm going to talk about the evaluation of the project, of the initiative. And again, I feel very fortunate to be able to do this because there are so many initiatives across the state. Into the Mouth of Babes is from North Carolina, ABCD is in Washington. I could keep going through the list. I'm struck actually by the number of states where there isn't any kind of global initiative, and people are doing this on this side and that on that side, and so it's very nice to have some consistency here within Colorado. So we wanted to learn how effective we were at training people, and thank you, Melissa, because it feels like we have been effective because you were one of our trainees, and so some of your number, you're an N in here. So I don't have anything to disclose, but I am talking about fluoride, which is off-label, and so that needs to be mentioned. So just to kind of reiterate briefly, nothing really had been done in Colorado, despite the fact that this initiative was crossing the states, until Linda Reiner and Colleen Lampron came around, and their wisdom said, okay, we need to start doing something about this. So they got this technical assistance team together. This was before Medicaid was reimbursing non-medical providers, and so they put out a grant to people like Melissa to say, would you like to receive this training? And Melissa's already described to you what that grant looked like. It's a little different now. Part of the technical assistance team included our state dental director, who was Diane Brunson at the time, and now Tracy Anselmo is there on the team. But it also included the Medicaid folks, and that was really important. And so if you're from a state where you haven't had the fortune of starting an initiative, I would encourage you to get those Medicaid folks at the table, because it was their presence at the table and our work with them that ended up getting Medicaid to change their policy to provide, to allow non-dental providers to do this. So that's important to do. Nobody's going to do anything if they don't get, I mean, the most philanthropic people can, but it takes money. We all know that. So in the first year, I'll recognize that these are early adopters. These are all folks that asked to be trained, and so the likelihood of them adopting the behavior is definitely different. But I think that everybody who's now asking for the training has some motivation to adopt the behavior. Nothing's being forced into their practice. They have to come to the Cavity Free at 3 times to team to get trained. Medicaid has done various things in various states. There have been a lot of states that have mandated that trainees get trained with a specific curriculum. And Colorado did the same thing. So Colorado Medicaid said that if you're a non-dental provider and you're going to provide these services, you need to show that you've gotten training. And so you either need to attend a Cavity Free at 3 training, or they can do the Smiles for Life modules online. And so just to try to make sure that they're validly providing those services. In the first year, 2008 to 2009, 10 grantees received the training. And like I said, as of July 2009, Medicaid changed their policy. So as Karen mentioned, we've tried to make this training as standardized as possible. It is not abbreviated. In a lot of states, it's a lunchtime training on how to provide fluoride varnish. And I'd be interested to see how extensive other states' programs are. Maybe you can share those with us at the end. But we have been pretty diligent to say we need at least a half a day of your time teaching both on the infant oral, child oral health piece, the perinatal piece, and including a hands-on portion. So to evaluate the success of the Cavity Free at 3 project, I use the Glasgow's REAIM framework. And just to reiterate what that is, I think there's a concurrent session right now about the REAIM framework. But it's often used to measure the implementation of programs into practices and into changing behavior practitioners, and it measures the reach, its effectiveness, the adoption of the program, its implementation, and its sustainability. So that's what we use in this. So to measure the reach, so technically when you think about reach, you're thinking, okay, what percent of the population is actually ultimately receiving the services? And that's hard to do because especially when you have this kind of program where we've got Melissa and we have paramedics doing it, and so I'll estimate the reach of the services. Eventually we'll be able to start to track Medicaid data, and we're working with Medicaid to do that. But for now, I'll tell you what we have. So we measure the training by having obviously a training log. We still provide the oral health kits with the initial training, and then we administered a survey, and that helped us. These are our oral health kits that they get. To try to estimate the reach of the care, we looked at administrative records, which I'll elaborate on, these risk assessment forms, which you've already seen in the survey, so talking about them in a little bit more detail. Again, to try to specifically measure this effectiveness at Denver Health, we are measuring using administrative records to look at how many well child care visits received a fluoride varnish code. Now we'll go back and do chart review to see what other characteristics were delivered at that visit, risk assessment, self-management goals, but for this talk we're looking just at the delivery of that fluoride varnish. Denver Health used the risk assessment tool, but they didn't physically keep that paper, and so we collected those risk assessment tools from other grantees across the state, and people like Melissa, we asked them to their CDR, and so we've collected those copies, and then we administered a survey. We administered an online survey to first-year trainees. This was 1 year after they received the training. Again, we used validated questions, and the survey was first piloted and then refined and administered online. And so what are our results? So Jack told you a little bit about what we've done so far. There have been 24 completed trainings just in this past year. As he said, over 600 trainees, lots of kits have been distributed. So that's our estimate of reach. We know specifically, for instance, within Denver Health, that over 3,000 visits, well child care visits, have included those basic preventive dental services, specifically fluoride varnish. In the first year, we stopped collecting these risk assessment tools, but in the first year, we collected over 1,500 of them across the state, so we felt that was good. And Melissa mentioned in her group that over 85% of those kids were at high risk for cavities. We have contracted with a company who makes those kits. Now, when we do our teaching, a lot of places don't buy those kits. They just assemble their fluoride and their gauze and their gloves. But we do know that the particular company who is supporting or providing our kits is continuing to get a lot of orders. So next I'm going to present the results of our online survey. And so this survey is of those first year grantees. There were over 300 providers that were surveyed. We had a good response rate. Most were female, a variety of years of graduation. And as you can look at the provider type, there's all different kind of provider types in that first year. There were medical providers, dental providers, public health nurses, RNs, medical assistants, and there were also some administrative staff there who weren't going to directly provide the care, but they were there because of their systems. These people worked in a variety of places, public health clinics, federally qualified health centers, medical schools, private dentists, and federally qualified dental clinics. So again, just to remind ourselves, this is a year after they've been trained, and so what are their knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs now? And so just the next few slides, everybody's in yellow, dental providers are in blue, and non-dental providers are in red. Sorry for those people who are colorblind. Am I messing up those colors for those people who are colorblind? And so, of course, you can't ask anybody to do anything different if you don't get their buy-in that it's important for them to do. So we felt that at least we convinced them, or they had already been convinced. We don't want to take credit for that. That they had both a role in preventing cavities, that the cavities were a problem in their patients, that fluoride varnish was safe, and that they felt some self-efficacy and that felt that they could change those oral health behaviors of their kids. So everybody felt that way a year after, no difference between medical and not, or dental and non-dental providers. So now we wanted to measure how good the training was at making these attendants confident. So the next five slides are going to compare if they were already confident in the skill before the training versus a year after they've been administering the training. And so again, on the right is dental and on the left is non-dental. And prior to them receiving the training, they felt that they were already confident in the examination of the teeth. And so there was a difference between the non-dental and the dental providers before they received the training as self-reported. But after the training, a year after, there wasn't any difference. So we felt that we were able to bring those non-dental providers' confidence level up to a good dental rate, using our dentists as our gold standard, so to speak. Regarding the demonstration of brushing teeth, simple skill. Before they received the training, the dentists were already confident in this skill, the dental providers, pardon me, but the non-dental providers were not confident, and there was a statistically significant difference. But at the year after, that everybody was confident. So everybody's confidence level went high, and there wasn't a difference between dental and non-dental. Now, how about measuring risk for cavities? Again, difference before between non-dental and dental providers, no difference a year after regarding that skill. So we felt, okay, at least we're getting people's confidence levels up. How about applying fluoride? Now, dental providers were way confident at the beginning. A year later, everybody's confident. There still is a statistically significance between non-dental and dental providers a year after. Everybody's doing well, but there's still a difference. How about providing anticipatory guidance? Same message, before difference, after no. Caregiver goal setting. So this is this tool that you saw where we go through and try to motivate the patient to take on some behaviors that they feel confident that they can change. Before dental providers, only 50% of them felt confident in that skill, but they did feel more confident than non-dental. And now, a year later, everybody feels confident, and there's no difference between provider types. So, adoption. Now, this is a high mark. You'll see that this is 75% of children in practices, and the way the question was asked, have you provided oral preventive care in the past 2 weeks, so recent recall of what they're doing, to 75% or more of the kids. So this is, I mean, to get anybody to do more, something more than 75% of the time is a high benchmark. So just recognize that this is a high benchmark. So just kind of draw a middle line down the middle, 50% of the time. So in some skills, most people were doing it at least 50% of the time, but there are some things that people were doing even a little bit better. Examining teeth, measuring risk, fluoride varnish, providing anticipatory guidance, there wasn't any difference between non-dental and dental providers a year later. There was a difference. Dental providers were more likely to demonstrate tooth brushing than non-dental providers. And dental providers were more likely to do that goal setting than non-dental providers. Okay, so let's not be so optimistic. Let's set the bar down to 50%. That's more realistic, really, anyway. And so all the lines are pushed to the right, closer to 100%. And then the majority of the time, dental providers and non-dental providers didn't differ, with the exception of that tooth brushing at the visit. Dental providers were still more likely to do that. So people have looked at barriers to adoption of this behavior in their practices. And in general, there aren't very many behaviors. A barrier that dentists list was lack of reimbursement. Otherwise, they didn't list a barrier. This is what they do. This is what they're doing in their office. Non-dental providers still had some difficulty. They still had a mild difficulty obtaining risk. They sometimes forgot still. They couldn't get the fluoride after the fluoride kits ran out. And time continues to be kind of the major barrier, although I want to say that it's not that major. It's happening less than a quarter of the time. So implementation maintenance. So of the 100 providers who are actually providing the services, not the administrators who are at the training, have they changed the Medicaid billing record or medical record? Half the time, yeah. Have they billed Medicaid? 60% had already done that. Had they planned for future trainings? We recognize that they have to integrate this training into their healthcare system because we can't go on and continue to train them over and over again. A little bit more than half had done that. 67%, two-thirds, had already made arrangements for getting their own fluoride, so we thought that was successful. And 75% their own oral health kits. And thankfully, and I think that this is the success of all, is 80% of them have established dental system for dental referrals, because that's really the bottom line. We can't do anything unless we have a good dentist to whom we can refer. And so in the future, how likely are you to continue to provide this care? Now, I didn't talk too much about pregnant women, but I did include one point here, that the large majority of people who attended these training felt they were very likely to continue to provide the care to both pregnant women and kids. No difference between, for kids, dental providers were still a little bit more likely to feel like they would continue that skill. So in conclusion, cavity-free at three care has reached over almost 5,000 kids in the first year, and continuing to treat more kids, reach more kids in following years. We feel the training model is effective at providing necessary confidence in the skills. We are seeing that there's a variety of different provider types who are willing to adopt this behavior, and that providers can learn this skill of risk assessment, and that it's an important skill. We see that lack of time is still a barrier for non-dental providers to do this provision of care, and that the provision of basic preventive dental services by medical providers is an opportunity to expand those services. So, I think that's it.
I want to thank our panel for an interesting discussion about a preventive program. You know, we talk a lot about integrating oral health into overall healthcare practice, and we have a dental professional, a nursing professional, and medical professionals all working together to provide oral health services, preventive services for children in the state of Colorado. So I'm very impressed. I want to open up the session for questions. Since we are recording, I'm going to ask our panelists are in the front row, and they can stand to answer your questions. But if you would, please come up to the mic, and we'll entertain any questions that you might have at this time. So, please.
I just have a question about the Medicaid reimbursement rates. How important do you think that is in terms of the success of the program, especially with the independent public health hygienists working in the WIC office?
Okay. Medicaid reimbursement rates and the importance of that. Would you care to come to the mic and answer?
Well, because we used registered dental hygienists who were already Medicaid providers, they were receiving reimbursement before the cavity-free at three specific reimbursement came into play. So there, it is very important because the county isn't paying them anything.
I hope I can answer your question. In Colorado, we have dental hygienists have the privilege of being independent practitioners, so we can go out and establish a practice. So we don't need direct supervision of a dentist in it to be able to do that. Our compensation rates here currently in Colorado for the combined two codes. Now this would be applicable to the medical providers and not the dental providers, but the compensation rate to add those two codes to a medical well-child visit is about $45. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I'm really more on the dental side.
So the compensation rates don't change on the dental side, but we don't have the restrictions of adding those codes to a well child visit. So as a dental provider, if I were an independent hygienist hired within a WIC setting, I can bill Medicaid for those services.
Yes, I understand that, but
so it's about $50 per encounter.
Okay. Okay.
So obviously there's some financial incentive for program sustainability here in Colorado.
That's an important issue to think
about. Absolutely. Absolutely. Please.
Other questions? Yes.
I'm from Eagle County, so how fun for me to come today and see my own county up on the screen. We're really excited about this program, and emphasis on prevention in our community is going to grow. Almost all of our restorative funding is going to be cut from our county budget in 2011, so this is more and more important. My question is there any effort at the state level to work with towns and communities, and particularly trailer parks, to have fluoridated water in the system? That deep preventative.
Our state dental director's here.
And very anxious to answer your question.
The question is, there a state effort to increase community water fluoridation within trailer parks and other areas of small population level? And the answer is no. The cost effectiveness really goes down if the population is less than 5,000, because the cost to fluoridate and the skill required and the regulations for our State Drinking Water Act are such that it's cost prohibitive in such small populations. You really lose that cost benefit. I do want to answer the question about Maine a little bit more clearly. So independent dental hygienists can bill for an assessment, and they can bill for the fluoride varnish. Our fluoride varnish reimbursement is around $15. So the $45 that we're talking about is for two procedures, and it has to include the anticipatory guidance, the assessment, the risk assessment, and the fluoride varnish application. That's why it seems like it's more cost beneficial for a provider to do that.
Question?
I have kind of a question and a comment, and I want to say that I think that it's really astonishing how impressive this program is when you think about what the state of oral hygiene for pediatric kids would be if we didn't have programs like this in Colorado. But I think that there's a real dilemma and challenge with oral hygiene in this country, because two of the overriding themes I've heard have been prioritizing oral hygiene, parents making it a real priority for their kids, but also affordability. And with every job that I've ever been a part of, when you go to check the benefits column for health insurance, you have to check a health insurance box and then a separate dental insurance box.
Right.
And so I think that there are a lot of parents in particular who want comprehensive coverage for their kids, but it's expensive, and it's separate. And in the model we have, you don't have to check a box if you say, well, do I want my eyes examined when I go see the doctor and pay extra for that? But for your teeth, somehow it's a separate entity from the rest of your body. And I don't know who invented dental insurance, but they were very shrewd. because as far as I understand it, Dr. Westfall alluded to this, in medical school, we don't consider the mouth a separate entity from the rest of your body, but yet we approach it differently in a clinical setting. So my question is, in an effort to make dental and oral hygiene a priority and more affordable, and I think if it was more affordable, it would be more of a priority for parents, is there anything being done at the state level to make oral hygiene more affordable for parents, not just parents who are at the very severely impacted income level or at the other extreme, people who can afford it already, but maybe more for people in the middle who have to make real conscious choices about, okay, do I take my kid to the dentist two times a year or four times a year? Do I flip a coin when deciding which one of my kids I'm going to get braces for because I can only afford it for one, Are there efforts being made at the state level to make comprehensive dental insurance not optional when you go and apply for a job, but actually sort of included in a comprehensive healthcare plan?
Wow. Please. Yeah, that's a critical question that we all address. That's sort of the big question. But please.
I know. I would encourage you to stay for the next presentation. Oh, so are there efforts at the state level to make dental insurance more affordable to people that are not only low income, but people that are in middle income or those that are not earning a living wage? So I do encourage you to stay the next one, because we're going to talk about the Affordable Care Act and the advantages. But in the state of Colorado, we are very lucky that a bill passed that assesses a provider fee to hospitals. And what that has done for the state of Colorado is it has allowed them to expand the eligibility for Medicaid and CHIP, and making that more affordable. And by the time that affordable care is actually implemented in 2014, we should see quite a few, if not the majority of kids, receiving a mandatory dental benefit. It's not going to be an option any longer. The problem still remains. If the adults aren't receiving care, the transmissibility still occurs, and they're belief system is not going to change, because if they can't get it, how are they going to model that behavior for the kids?
With that, I ask you to, time is up, so I'm going to ask you to thank our panelists again, once again.